Would like to extend another welcome to those that are visiting with us. We're encouraged by you being here, and we're happy to have you here. We hope that this time that we spend together will be beneficial to you as it is to us. We'd like to encourage you to turn to John chapter 19. John chapter 19. We will continue talking about joy, rejoicing in the Lord. We've been doing this once a month. And we've also, along those lines, been talking about things that can kind of distract our focus and make us decide that we can find joy in other things rather than just joy in the Lord. And so we've been contrasting a little bit of that fake joy, that deceptive idea of joy versus true joy in the Lord. And what I want to talk to you this morning is about control, power. The ability to have an influence over circumstances and things in our lives. And so we're going to start in John 19, verse 1. It says, Pilate took Jesus and he flogged him, and the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. They came up to him saying, Hail, King of the Jews, and struck him with their hands. Pilate went out again and said to them, See, I am bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no guilt in him. So Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, Behold, the man. When the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, Crucify him, crucify him. Pilate said to them, Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him. And the Jews answered him, We have a law, and according to that law he ought to die because he has made himself the Son of God. When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. He entered his headquarters again and said to Jesus, Where are you from? But Jesus gave him no answer. So Pilate said to him, You will not speak to me? Do you not know that I have authority to release you and authority to crucify you? Jesus answered him, You would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given to you from above. Therefore, he who delivered me over to you has the greater sin. Pilate was, at his time, he was a pretty powerful guy. He was in an authoritative position. And he thought that that authoritative position gave him control over not only the people that were under his charge, but even Jesus. And that's why he makes this statement, Do you not know that I have authority? And Jesus says, No, actually you don't. You don't really have as much authority as you think that you do. It's not really the circumstance you think this is, that you only have authority because it's been given to you from above. You know, there's lots of things in our life that we want to have control over, things that we want to have power over. And we experience a lot of luxuries today, a lot of benefits of modern technology. You know, when it gets pretty warm, I turn on the air conditioning and it cools my house down. When it gets a bit cold, I turn on the heat and it warms up the house. But I think a couple of years ago we learned that even that can be taken away from us. And when that power goes out, suddenly I don't have the control that I thought that I did. Suddenly I can't cool the house down or warm it up. Suddenly I can't do what I once could do. And that's when we learn an important lesson. We don't always have the amount of control and power over things in our life that we think that we do. That it can be taken away in an instant. You got somewhere you need to go. You've got an appointment you need to keep. It's something very important to you. You go out and you get in your vehicle and it won't start. And you start to wonder, well, what am I going to do? Now maybe you've got another car, you could just go get it in a different one, but maybe you don't, and maybe you're wondering, well, who could I call that could come and rescue me out of this situation and take me to this appointment because my car won't start? I've lost the power to be there on time without the help of someone else. Electricity goes out when we're doing something important. Maybe we're working on the computer and we're writing an important email. We're writing an important document. For me, maybe working on a sermon. And suddenly the power goes out. You lose some of that which you've kept. We see a storm and we see power go out for several days in which we really begin to become concerned because we don't have the ability to keep the home at a comfortable temperature or even keep our food safe in the refrigerator or the freezer. And when we finally get the power back on, when it finally brings everything in our home back to life, it's like everything goes back to normal. We've been given that control back, and we learn we simply didn't have as much control as we thought we did. And it is times like those that we're reminded that power over circumstances in our lives is actually very unpredictable. And much of the time, the control or power we might have is an illusion, or a lot more dependent than we realize, or maybe that we'd even like to admit. And we can feel powerful. We can feel like we have control, and then one little thing comes into the situation and it's like a house of cards that just falls apart. All it takes is one event, one diagnosis, one economic downturn, one power outage, and we're reminded that we have needs and we have dependencies. And yet we're tempted to make power or control the object of our joy. And when we feel powerful, when we feel like we're in control of the circumstances of our lives, and maybe even in control or authority over others or other people, or maybe when people look up to us or admire us for the position that we're in or the accomplishments that we have, we feel in control and we feel like we're happy. But just as we become tempted to make an idol out of that pleasure and out of that control, we lose it. It's gone. And the danger is that a passion for that power, that control, that independence will steal away our ability to then rejoice in the Lord. A passion for power or control over these things can blind us to the fact that the Lord is the one that is truly in control, and the Lord is the one who truly has the power to help us. We are dependent upon Him. Jesus told Pilate, "You only have authority because it's been given to you." In Matthew 28 and verse 18, He told His disciples, "All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me." And as long as our passion in life is to have control over these circumstances or control over what we think our future holds, then joy just becomes something unpredictable too, because those circumstances are unpredictable. And if our greatest joy then is to trust God's power and to trust God's authority, then we will be able to rejoice in the Lord always. And so again, I want to spend a little bit of time this morning contrasting the counterfeit joy of the world and the true, authentic joy that is found in Christ. There is this mistaken idea that you can have more joy in your life if you have more power or a control based on, well, I've got more money, I've got more resources, I've got the right circumstance, I've got the right job, I've got the right people around me. Whatever it is based on, sometimes it's even in personal things like strength and beauty. It's a mistaken idea that your joy can come from these things. And so I suggest to you that that kind of thinking will steal away your joy, because those things do not last. But God's power, God's control, God's strength, and even God's beauty never ends. Our God is glorious, and He will be for all of eternity. And so I want us to consider a couple of, well, problems with this situation. And let's first of all think about why people like to have power and control. And I think this comes from something that John mentioned in 1 John 2 and verse 16, when he says, "All that is in the world, the desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world." It is that pride of life that I think this comes from. It is that pride of life that makes us desire to move up, to have more control, to be admired, to be in a position of power. But in Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 17, it says, haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, these are abominations to the Lord. Those haughty eyes, that prideful look, that prideful way of life. And pride is that sense of feeling just a little bit better or more superior to others for whatever reason. And it can be based on that position, that title, abilities, wealth, or even the way somebody looks, their physical features, whether it be strength or beauty or both. And some of the most prideful people in the world are those that hold some sort of a high position in government or in business or whatever it might be. Maybe they're highly respected in their field. They wear a title of distinction. They have great ability even. Sometimes they have vast amount of wealth. Sometimes they might be what these media outlets put out as one of the most beautiful people in the world. Actors, musicians, they're probably the most vulnerable to that sin of pride because the adoring public just won't let them forget just how great they are because they really love them. But we don't have to be an actor. We don't have to be a musician. We don't have to be a politician. We don't even have to be the CEO to fall prey to the pride of life. Let's think about some examples. Eve's pride centered on the sharing of that knowledge of good and evil with God. She wanted to partake of that fruit, and Satan said that she would become like God. Perhaps that was a matter of having some amount of power that would come with that knowledge, but at its core, it was a matter of pride. She wanted that. She wanted it for herself and for her husband. Well, think about King Herod, that he was filled with such pride that he feared sharing his power as king even with an infant when those wise men came along. Rome gave the Jewish leaders power over their people, power to conduct themselves according to their religion and their traditions. And what did they do with it? They wielded it with an iron hand, and they put great burdens upon the people, burdens that they themselves were not willing to bear them at all. And so when Jesus comes along and he demonstrates his divine power, when he gives his teachings and condemns some of the things that they're doing, and he shows this love and compassion to others, yes, even the tax collectors, these leaders were prideful and they wanted to destroy him. You see pride everywhere. But I don't think we have to really look that far to see it. I think all of us fall prey to the sin of pride from time to time. And that's why we need to be engaging ourselves in some honest evaluation to determine, am I falling prey to this? Am I becoming prideful? Is the pride of life rising in my own life? Sometimes we're vulnerable to that bloated ego, that inflated idea of who I am. We can be too proud of even things that we've accomplished, things that we've acquired, investments that we've made that may have made us money, or homes that we've bought, or anything along these lines. We become so prideful of these things because, well, we worked hard to achieve those things. We made good investments that allowed us to do that. We become prideful of these things. We can even become too proud of our physical features and our health, thinking, well, I've kept this health regimen for a long time, and I look at me, I'm doing so well, when it really could be lost in an instant. Pride of life is just troublesome for us all the way around. Psalm 10 and verse 4, in the pride of his face, the wicked does not seek him. All his thoughts are, there is no God. We forget God altogether when we become prideful. Proverbs 15 and verse 25, the Lord tears down the house of the proud, but he maintains the widow's boundaries. The idea would be that the widow is humble. Proverbs 16 and verse 5, everyone who is arrogant in heart is an abomination to the Lord. That one's pretty strong. We become prideful and we become an abomination to the Lord. He goes on to say, be assured he will not go unpunished. Then later in Proverbs 16, verse 18, pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. And then Proverbs 29:23, one's pride will bring him low, but he who is lowly in spirit will obtain honor. You know, we can puff ourselves up, be proud of ourselves and be brought down, or we can be humble and be lifted up. It's our choice. And two of the things that we get prideful about most are simply not with us for very long. Proverbs 23 verse 5, when your eyes light on it, it is gone, for suddenly it sprouts wings, flying like an eagle toward heaven. Doesn't matter what the thing is. It's fleeting. It's temporary. It will be gone. Proverbs 31 verse 30, charm is deceitful. Beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. You see, some people that are so prideful about their own looks, as if they think they'll go on forever, they'll never disappear. But they fade, they go away. We need a reminder that God is opposed to the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. But how important is grace within that statement there in 1 Peter 5 and verse 5? Well, grace is everything that God ever intended to give man, both to survive this life and to live with him in the life to come. David said in Psalm 40 and verse 4, blessed is that man who makes the Lord his trust and does not respect the proud. You ever heard the statement, nice guys finish last or good guys finish last? There was an article written by John Lehrer of Wall Street Journal a while back, and he talked about nice guys actually can get ahead. They can accomplish something in the business world. They can get into that position, you know, CEO, CFO, whatever it might be. But he says, but once they get up to the top, they end up morphing into a very different kind of person. They become less sympathetic to the concerns of others. They spend much less time making eye contact, at least when a person with lesser power is talking. In other words, they become filled with the pride of life, and it changes them. It changes them. That's what pride does. Well, the second thing is this control. Control comes with authority and power. But power can give us a false sense of control, because there is nothing on this earth that lasts forever. There is no power that is completely final. Or you could say, but what about so-and-so who's, you know, president of the United States or the wealthiest man in the world or whatever you want to put in there? What about them? Well, it goes away. After a while, they're no longer president of the United States. After a while, that person with great wealth either does something to squander the wealth or he simply dies and that wealth can't do him any good. 1 Peter 1:25, all men are like grass, and all their glory is like the flowers of the field. The grass withers, the flowers fall, but the word of the Lord stands forever. It is only these spiritual things and our spiritual nature that lasts. Everything else is completely temporary. And we just don't simply have all the power, the control, the strength that we think that we do. And when those things are suddenly gone, when they're suddenly taken away from us, then we're frustrated and depressed. And if that's the source of our joy, then our life becomes devoid of joy. You see, the strong man feels strong until then someone stronger comes in. Forgive me, I should have written his name down, but I was thinking about this. A little while back, I was reading this story about this guy that was in all these strongman competitions, and he was known all over the world as pretty much the strongest man on earth. And one day, he literally broke his back lifting weights. He pushed too far. And so then there was like before pictures of when he was at his height, and there was after pictures when people are having to help him walk around. It's gone. It was gone in an instant. And so the strong man is strong until someone else is stronger. The powerful man is powerful until someone else walks in that's more powerful. We can even feel important at work. We can think, I'm doing something good. I'm important to this company, until the boss shows up and tells us to change everything. I remember a day when I was sitting in our common area where we were doing tech support, and one of the higher-up bosses, I think it was my boss's boss, walked through the area, and he looked at the room full of guys, and he said, "What do we need this many people for? Fire these guys." Feel pretty good about yourself till something like that happens. And then you're wondering, how would I put food on the table tomorrow? And I'll let you guess what a lot of us did that evening. We can run our own businesses. We can hire employees to work for us and think, I'm doing well. I'm in charge. I'm in charge of you know, my life, and I'm making money, and I am successful, and you feel powerful until IRS walks in the door, or OSHA walks in the door. Somebody from the government that has enough power to take it all away in an instant. These things provide this counterfeit joy because they're not real, they're not concrete. There's so many things in this life that are simply out of our control. And if all we live our life for is to control those circumstances, it'll be empty. Solomon wrote in Proverbs 19 and verse 21, "Many are the plans in the mind of a man, but it is the purpose of the Lord that will stand." It's not our world. It's not our universe. It's God's. He is its creator, and He is in control. But not only is control really an illusion, but it also can be quite damaging. Because when we feel in control, then we feel like we have the power and the right to even mistrust or abuse others around us. Sometimes we see people in our world around us that are very wealthy, or that are very well off in terms of a position that they might have, or maybe it's even somebody in government that's high up that has lots of power and authority, and some scandal comes out and shows that behind the scenes they were reprehensible. They were doing terrible things. They abuse the power that they gain. If you want to turn over to the book of Ecclesiastes chapter 4, let's read a few verses there. Solomon saw the effects of this desire for authority, power, and control. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, beginning in verse 13. Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 13. "Better was a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king who no longer knew how to take advice. For he went from prison to the throne, though in his own kingdom he had been born poor. I saw all the living who move about under the sun, along with that youth who was to stand in the king's place. There was no end of all the people, all of whom he led. Yet those who come later will not rejoice in him. Surely this also is vanity and a striving after wind." In other words, he works his way up from poor to king. He doesn't remember what he came from. He's not sympathetic about the people that he's leading. No. In fact, when all is said and done, and the memoirs are written The legacy is written about that king. No one would rejoice about him. Nobody would look at him and say, "That sure was a good king. Sure was a good man." No, not at all. People desire to have power. They want to be strong. It appeals to their pride. It gives them a false sense of control. It's no wonder that Paul said in 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 26, "Not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called." Why is that? Because they're focused on themselves. They are prideful. And pride blinds us to the fact that we have a need, that we are dependent. Those that are blinded by pride do not desire God. And that there is the big danger for us all. But today, Jesus Christ is Lord. More than that, He is our Savior and He is our brother. Jesus Christ has all authority in heaven and on earth. And it's not the fleeting kind of authority that could be taken away, no. No, this is the authority of the Almighty God. He is Lord of all, Acts 10 and verse 36. And so all power and all control rightfully belong to Him. And I think we need to pay close attention to the way Jesus used His power and His control. He could have been prideful, He could have been harsh, He could have been demanding, but rather He exercised His divine power in an humble way with love and compassion to help others. He did not come to be served, but He came to serve. He came to give His life as a ransom for sins. And yet, for those that do not take advantage of Him ransoming your soul, that price that He paid, He will one day use His authority to send us away. "Depart from me, I never knew you." Let's make sure that we rejoice in the Lord, but truly in the Lord. In those things that are not counterfeit, not in the things of this world, not allowing Satan to deceive us into thinking that we can acquire these things and be joyful on our own. We need the Lord. Make no mistake about it. We need Jesus. If you're here this morning and you realize you need Jesus right now to become a child of God, being baptized for the remission of sins, confessing your faith, your belief in Him, committing to a life of faithfulness toward Him will certainly help you to do that. If you realize that though you've done those things, maybe you didn't hold to that commitment, or maybe you realize that pride is a problem in your life, or you just want to confess that you feel the pull of temptation, the deceitfulness of Satan, our adversary, and you want the support and the help of your brethren, then you need to let us know. We've selected number 449. As a song of invitation, if you have these needs, please come to the front while we stand and while we sing.